Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program. Stay with us for the next half hour as we bring you the big stories from Africa and around the world. I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
We shall also follow the hashtags and keep you up to date with what's trending on social radio. So don't miss out on that. I'm Sela Oneko in Bonn, Germany.
And coming up in the program, Ghana's scheduled December 7th election faces uncertainty as the Electoral Commission grapples with multiple court cases.
If we are not able to handle this matter very carefully, this could delay the election.
And Kenya blames the UN peacekeeping mission in South Sudan for using its sacked Kenyan commander to cover for the mission's failures.
We have criticized the way the mission was structured, and now to focus and limit the criticism on the force commander, I think, will not really address the real issue.
And today we've got our first blog interview, and it's on the US elections.
We'll return in about 3.5 minutes. Until then, here's what's been taking place around the world.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. There has been outrage at the arrest by Turkish authorities of 12 pro-Kurdish parliamentarians. The European Union said the detentions compromised parliamentary democracy in Turkey and would exacerbate the already very tense situation in the southeast of the country. The United Nations Human Rights Office said it was concerned the steps that the authorities were taking went beyond what was permissible. German Foreign Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier said Turkey must be clear about what direction it wants to go and what this will mean for relations with the European Union. British Prime Minister Theresa May told EU leaders on Friday she is confident a court ruling that could delay Britain's departure from the bloc will be overturned and that she can stick to her Brexit timetable. The ruling said Parliament had to be consulted before the process of disengaging from the EU could begin. Veteran parliamentarian Paddy Ashdown has been defending the decision to involve Parliament.
Our democracy is built on the executive under the control of Parliament, and Parliament will exercise that duty. And let me just say that in that process, properly handled, I believe you can come to a constructive outcome without too much delay.
European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker said on Friday the timing of Brexit was in the hands of the British authorities. But Berlin told visiting British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson further delay wasn't in anybody's interest. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. A South Sudanese rebel spokesman, James Gadet Dak, has been deported from Kenya because of a Facebook posting in which he voiced support for the firing of a Kenyan UN peacekeeping commander. The commander, Lieutenant General Johnson Magoha Kimani Ondieki, was sacked from his post in South Sudan after the mission there was accused of responding poorly to attacks on civilians. Kenya has since announced that it is withdrawing its 1,000 troops from the mission, and the incident clearly angered Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta.
Peace will not come to South Sudan by blaming a Kenyan commander for the wider failings of the mission to South Sudan.
South Africa's main prosecutor, Sean Abrahams, has confirmed that Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan was still being investigated over his role in the setting up of a surveillance unit at the tax department, which allegedly spied on politicians. Abrahams dropped fraud charges against Gordhan on Monday and said on Friday that the surveillance unit investigations were now at an advanced stage. For more news and information, please visit our website dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
The big question mark. Will Ghana hold its general elections as scheduled for December the 7th? There is growing concern among Ghanaian voters that the West African country may not. That's because Ghana's Electoral Commission is currently embroiled in a legal tussle with nearly a dozen presidential candidates after it disqualified them. From Accra, Isaac Kalechi reports.
Since 1992, Ghanaians have always voted for their members of parliament and a president on December 7. However, this year's elections are surrounded with dark clouds. More than four political parties are battling the country's election management body in court for disqualifying 12 presidential candidates. The Electoral Commission of Ghana says the candidates had errors on their nomination forms. Political analyst and an election observer, Kwesi Jonah, thinks the election management body should be dialoguing with the aggrieved parties instead of battling them in court.
If we are not able to handle this matter very carefully, this could delay the election, assuming that on the 7th of December, we are not able to hold elections because of court cases. What happens? There are far-reaching implications, and as a nation, what we want is to maintain Ghana's reputation as a very peaceful country, able to conduct free, fair, transparent elections.
The Electoral Commission has already gone to the Supreme Court to challenge a High Court ruling faulting it for not giving enough time to the aggrieved candidates to correct their supposed errors on their forms. For many, the fear is the possibility that the legal battles may disrupt the calendar for the elections. However, that fear has been allayed by the country's Chief Justice, Georgina Theodora Wood.
We need to conduct affairs in the national interest and in a just manner that will not disrupt either our electoral or constitutional calendar. I am confident that the maximum professional diligence would be deployed by all judges in adjudicating the multiple suits being filed ahead of December 7, 2016.
For the commission managing the elections, it doesn't anticipate the court actions to disrupt the polls. The chairperson of the commission, Charlotte Osei, discloses that almost 90% of preparations for the elections have been completed.
We cannot only look at the case from the perspective of those whose nominations were not accepted. You also have to look at the rights of those who met the requirements within the nomination period. So we have to be very balanced and we have to follow the law. In the meantime, we have started the process of printing the parliamentary ballots.
Political parties, both those disqualified and approved for the elections, are busy campaigning as they await the courts to pronounce on the issue. Election stakeholders are hoping the elections are not postponed to further complicate matters.
Isaac Kalechi in Accra.
Now on social media, one video that has been shared a lot by Ghanaians is a music video by an artist known as Samini. It's called Mama Ghana and it's featuring Kofi Kinata. And it's asking young people to vote and to vote peacefully. Let's give you a short taste of that video from YouTube. And the video has been endorsed by the Electoral Commission as their official election song.
Well, there's always a lot of music going on around elections.
Yes, there is. And the artist Samini in particular wanted to let Ghanaians know that he is registered and going to vote because apparently celebrities in Ghana have been accused of not voting at all.
Well, let's say with the elections and of course with the US election just around the corner on November the 8th, observers say this year's campaign is one of the most vitriolic with both candidates attacking each other instead of addressing issues. As Isaac Mugabe reports, one of the biggest issues the incoming president will have is to address the issue of migrants.
About 11 million unregistered migrants live in the United States. Most of them come from Latin America, Mexico, Honduras, or El Salvador. Donald Trump wants to stop illegal immigration by building a wall on the border with Mexico. The billionaire has been quoted saying, "I will make Mexico pay for the wall." The deportation of all illegal immigrants brought Trump into the game and won him many supporters.
We need strong borders. You have thousands of mothers and fathers and relatives all over the country. They're coming in illegally. Drugs are pouring in through the border. We have no country if we have no border. Hillary wants to give amnesty. She wants to have open borders. The single biggest problem is heroin that pours across our southern borders, just pouring and destroying their youth. It's poisoning the blood of their youth and plenty of other people. Right now, we're getting the drugs, they're getting the cash.
So what does Hillary Clinton have to say on this issue? In a nutshell, she wants controlled immigration.
I don't want to rip families apart. I don't want to be sending parents away from children. I don't want to see the deportation force that in our country. We have 11 million undocumented people. They have 4 million American citizen children, 15 million people. And my comprehensive immigration reform plan, of course, includes border security. But I want to put our resources where I think they're most needed, getting rid of any violent person, anybody who should be deported, we should deport them. So I think we are both a nation of immigrants and we are a nation of laws, and that we can act accordingly. And that's why I'm introducing comprehensive immigration reform within the first 100 days with a path to citizenship.
Another key issue for both U.S. presidential candidates is the fight against terrorism and ending the so-called Islamic State. In the early stages of the campaign, Trump proposed a complete ban on Muslims entering the U.S. Currently, Iraqi forces and Kurdish fighters are fighting to recapture Mosul from Islamic State, usually called ISIS, in the U.S., and Hillary Clinton is optimistic that they will ultimately be successful.
It's going to be a hard fight. I've got no illusions about that. And then continue to press into Syria to begin to take back and move on Raqqa, which is the ISIS headquarters. I am hopeful that the hard work that American military advisors have done will pay off, and that we will see a really successful military operation.
As this week ends, Clinton is still favored to win next Tuesday's election, but Trump is closing in and could overtake her, especially if there is a sharp fall in turnout among Afro-Americans from the level of the last election in 2012. So who will determine the U.S.'s future relationship with its NATO allies, and what kind of trade and other partnerships will be pursued is still wide open.
That report was compiled by Isaac Mugabe. The spat between Kenya and the UN peacekeeping mission in South Sudan took another twist as Russia joined Kenya in condemning the sacking of Kenyan General Johnson Mogoa Kimani Ondieki. The general was fired by UN Chief Ban Ki-moon following a report that he failed to protect South Sudanese civilians during an outbreak of violence in the capital Juba in July. Kenya responded to the move by saying it is pulling out all of its troops from the peacekeeping mission. Peter Schumann is a former representative for the UN mission in Sudan. He's been sharing with me what he makes of this diplomatic row.
I agree with the statement the Kenyan government has made, that they simply say, you know, there are fundamental structural and systemic dysfunctionalities which has hindered its ability, the ability of the mission, to discharge its mandate since its inception. I mean, this is, we have criticized the way the mission was structured, the way the mission was supported by DPKO, the way the mission was supported by the Security Council. And now to focus and limit the criticism on the force commander, I think, will not really address the real issue.
So what then would have been the right way to go about the issue? I mean, what exactly needs to be done to restructure, to make the mission a success in South Sudan?
I cannot tell you what is the final solution, but I think we must see a preparedness from the Security Council and from DPKO to finally, you know, put the political issues on the table. A mission operating in a sovereign state, mandated to protect civilians, which are to a large extent under threat from the government and from rebel forces, cannot operate with the given tools and procedures and policies. That's not fair. But let me make a second point. Focusing on the incident in the Tehran compound around Annis. Other member states have also reacted to this. The German government, the UK government, the Swedish government withdrew on the 13th of July their police officers without any consultations with the United Nations. This needs to be investigated. There are other incidents which happened around this very crucial and very bad time. And now, as I repeat myself, to just put it on the force commander's responsibility, this is a mistake.
Former representative for the UN mission in Sudan, Peter Schumann.
And if you have any suggestions or comments on the interviews here, head to our Facebook page, DW Africa.
We've got everything from politics to lighter issues. And this afternoon, we just posted a video on fitness bootcamp in Ghana. That's from our Africa on the Move series. And you can see Ghanaians who are struggling with their weight, working out and learning how to eat healthier. In the next 15 minutes here at Africa Link, a look into the lives of Ethiopian migrant returnees.
In Dubai, it was very hard. Even the street gangsters were about to kill me.
And we'll talk to one of the authors of the blog, Africa's a Country.
Plus, a look ahead to the Bundesliga game between Bayern Munich versus Hoffenheim on Saturday. So do stay with Africa Link. Now, ever since the EU began tightening restrictions on migration, many would-be asylum seekers from Ethiopia are choosing to return home. DW correspondent Coletta Wanjohi met some of the migrants who had returned, and as she now reports, life for them is not as easy, but they are slowly picking up the pieces.
Over 30 returnee migrants got the chance to establish themselves as traders in Ethiopia. They have presented their business plans to a local organization in Ethiopia called Live Addis, which has been assisting them. In a few weeks, they will be self-employed. In 2014, Alazar Beshaf went to Dubai, following his friend's advice that he would get a better job. A high school dropout with no legal migration documents, he failed to get a visa. After 5 months, he returned home to Ethiopia.
In Dubai, it was very hard. I suffered a lot, and for 5 months, even the street gangsters were about to kill me.
When he returned, Beshaf approached Live Addis, a European Union-funded local organization based in Addis Ababa. It assists illegal migrants and victims of human trafficking. He has now completed a 21-day training course on business management that Live Addis sponsored, and he is ready to begin his own business. His plan is to start making injera, a soft, spongy pancake-like bread, very popular in Ethiopia. He will sell it to residents of his area.
Like 60,000 people live there, but there is nothing. They buy injera outside. So first I start with 4 electric stoves to make injera. Now I have 2 stoves. So Live Addis will give me some money and I will buy the other 2 stoves.
Alazar is presenting his business plan alongside his other 31 classmates, all returnee migrants. Alemayo Teshome, the executive director for Live Addis, says that before implementation, all the plans will be reviewed again for viability.
After reviewing that business plan, it might not take us more than 2 weeks in general. Then we are going to provide, based on the revised and the approved business plan, we are going to provide them a startup capital or tools that is going to be used by our projects.
Live Addis will then link them to the local administration to get licenses.
Live Addis also have assigned a community facilitators to follow up and give technical support and advice when they really start their own business, at least for a minimum of 6 months.
For now, this is the new life that Beshaf and his other 31 counterparts have to embrace and ensure that it is successful.
Coletta Wanjohi in Addis Ababa. You are listening to DW's Africa Link. There's a big game coming up in the Bundesliga on Saturday. League leaders Bayern Munich are hosting Hoffenheim at the Allianz Arena. Sparks are definitely guaranteed to fly as both teams remain unbeaten this season. Hoffenheim is currently third in the Bundesliga with only 4 points separating them from Bayern. DW's Kiswahili service is airing a live commentary on the match. I asked Sekione Kitojo, Kiswahili sports editor and one of the commentators, what chances Hoffenheim has against Bayern.
Well, I think the chances are just 50-50 because Bayern, as you have said, has never been beaten. I think the only possibility of Hoffenheim maybe to beat Bayern, the key is in the hands of the coach himself, Nagelsmann. The guy has done a very good job with TSG Hoffenheim this season because, as you know, last season, TSG Hoffenheim were about to be relegated. And when he took over, he made the team back into Bundesliga again. And this time, from start to this game, they haven't been beaten. And they are just flying high.
Bayern Munich striker Robert Lewandowski has just been named the Bundesliga player of the month of October. Why not Modeste of FC Köln, who is currently not just the league's top scorer, but Europe's as well, with 11 goals in 9 matches? Why not him?
Well, even I would choose Modeste because he has 11 goals up to now. He has been scoring in every match, and he scored 3 goals last match. To me, he is the best goal scorer in the Bundesliga at the moment. But I don't know how they chose Lewandowski. The criteria, I don't know the criteria which made them choose Lewandowski, because he has been missing a lot of chances, and he has scored only about 7 goals up to now.
DW Kiswahili Service has been airing live commentary on Bundesliga games for about, 2 months, more or less. What has been the response from African football lovers?
There is a very big response. They are listening to us, and, well, they have been telling us to go on because they wanted to know the Bundesliga, because they are used to listen to Premier League, the Premier League and La Liga and Italy Serie A, but they haven't been listening to matches from Bundesliga. This is the first time, and I think people are following us a lot.
DW's Kiswahili sports editor Sekione Kitojo. For the Kiswahili and Hausa-speaking regions, tune in to DW tomorrow for a live commentary of the Bayern-Hoffenheim match.
Blog report.
So my name is Anna Kwadramina. I was born and raised in Ghana, but have been in the States for the last 10 years.
Anakwa writes for the paper, The New Republic, but he's also a regular contributor to Africa as a Country. That's a very popular online blog that deals with cliches about Africa, about Africans. And so I asked him, what do the U.S. elections mean for Africans?
Well, I think that it was very clear that Africa is not really a priority when it comes to the U.S. elections. And it sort of goes back actually to in January when Obama gave his State of the Union address. This was sort of, we were waiting for the last chance to see where he mentioned his work in Africa. And instead, he talked about Africa as a place where he was fighting ISIS and the United States militarily defeated Ebola. And so, you know, from that standard, there's no expectation for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump to, you know, take Africa any more seriously if this president, who supposedly had a personal connection to the continent, didn't.
I know Africans, especially Kenyans, were celebrating when he first won the elections.
Yes, the first Luo president, quote unquote.
Now, one big movement that caught the U.S. a year ago is the Black Lives Matter movement. In your most recent article for Africa as a Country, you spoke to Africans living in the U.S. Can they relate to this movement?
Yeah, certainly. I think in the piece I wrote talking about how Africans are being perhaps compelled to think about the issue of race in America, because by virtue of the fact that we do have black skin and do face prejudice, whether it's in terms of police brutality or institutional racism. I think that, interestingly, both candidates have looked at the black vote as, you know, something to be fought for rather than thought conclusively about issues as they relate to, you know, black people.
That's interesting. I mean, even after all these protests, you'd think it's much more important. But let's switch to another topic. At DW, we've been running a social media special called What America? And we've been asking people what America they would like to have. So, my question for you, what America would you like to see after the elections?
You know, so I think that I would definitely want an America that makes an effort towards immigration reform, and that makes the lives of immigrants much easier. Because you look at New York, for instance, where 37% of the population of New York City are immigrants. And, you know, New York is sort of the face of America, and yet we have this. When we talk about immigration reform, it's more of a punitive thing, telling people to get back in line or sending them back to their countries or sending them back to Africa, rather than trying to figure out ways in which to recognize the, you know, amount of labor that immigrants bring to the United States, to New York or wherever. That is the America that I would like to see.
And one last question. Africa is a country. Is that really how Americans see us?
You know, sadly, that is not inaccurate. Apart from my most recent piece on Obama's legacy, I interviewed a number of YALI fellows, who the Young African Leadership Initiative. And a lot of the fellows, one thing that kept coming up was that when they had come to America to meet these experts and leaders, a lot of the leaders, they did not know the existence of their countries. One lady, for instance, from Equatorial Guinea, everyone was shocked that she spoke Spanish. The idea that it was a Spanish-speaking country in Africa was, you know, and I think that there's still a very much exists a monolithic idea of Africa. So Africa as a country playfully plays on that idea.
Thanks, Anakwa, for talking to me a little earlier. That was Anakwa Dwamena, who writes for the blog Africa as a Country, a very popular blog on Africa and African culture and cliches about Africa. And it's based in the US, at least its editors are. And I wanted to ask, I mean, Crispin, what do you think about the title, Africa as a Country?
You want my honest opinion on that? I think it's interesting, because I think that if the US and probably the rest of the world thinks that Africa is a country, I don't know why Africans themselves don't want to buy into that idea. I think we do have a lot of things in common in Africa. You know, we are one more or less the same people.
And we speak different languages, though.
We do.
Many different languages and many international languages as well.
I agree. But I think that we have a lot of shared heritage. You know, if you look at the Fulanis, or you look at the Maasais, or you look at the people from East Africa, from South, there's a lot of connection. So it's not a bad idea to actually think of ourselves as being one country. Maybe it might just help, you know, solve a lot of those conflicts that we have at the moment.
It might. Now, if you want to find out more about how Africans see and are perhaps voting in the US election, check out our Facebook page, EW Africa. And for example, we've got an interview there from our TV colleague, Brent Goff, who interviewed Malik Obama yesterday. That's the half-brother of President Obama.
Yes, and interestingly, Malik Obama is supporting Donald Trump, not Hillary Clinton, as many would have expected him to.
Exactly. And I mean, especially if you listen to the interview before, you might also question what he thinks about migration policy of Donald Trump. And so you should definitely check that out. And we also hope that, we hope you have some peace and quiet soon from the US elections, but next Tuesday, that's election day in the US, we want to hear from you how you would perhaps vote if you lived in the US, if you could vote in the US. You can send us your answers as a comment under any US-related post on our Facebook page.
And the Facebook page is DW Africa.
That's right. And we'll be posting a couple of videos as well from DW's social media special, What America, which we just talked about earlier. And basically, they were reporters in, and like for the last year, they've been asking people in the US and also from around the world, from African countries as well, what America they would like to see after the elections. So there are quite a few interesting ideas there, and also some quirky people who, you know, on the election trail, for example, in the US. I mean, there are just some people who are really very enthusiastic about their support for the two candidates.
Yeah, so looking forward to your comments on DW Facebook Africa page. It's almost time for us to go, Sela, but before we do that, here's a recap of our main stories. Ghanaian voters have voiced concerns over the prospect of the December 7th election being postponed. Russia has joined Kenya in criticizing the UN for sacking a Kenyan commander who headed the UN peacekeeping mission in South Sudan. And in other African news, Uganda's High Court on Friday ordered the closure of a chain of low-cost private schools backed by Microsoft and Facebook founders Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg. And the ANC Youth League has criticized the state capture report, saying it failed to mention the white monopoly capital, which the Youth League says are the true capturers of the South African economy. And that does it for this edition of Africa Link. On behalf of the production and technical team, thank you for keeping us company throughout this week. And hope you join us again next week, Monday at 16 hours UTC, for a fresh look at the continent.
And remember to comment on any of the stories that you find interesting on our Facebook page, EW Africa.
Thank you for listening. And until next week, it's goodbye and take care.